Glowworm by Alison Greaves. Chapter 7. A to Z. In her final year of primary school, Viv's class took part in a sports exchange. Her entire gymnastics class switched for 2 weeks with students from a private girls' school out in the countryside who had professional trainers and state-of-the-art equipment and an alumni association newsletter with pictures of Olympic medalists on the cover. The school itself was almost insultingly magnificent, but Viv remembers most clearly the bus journey out from home, the view from the window morphing from town to suburb to farmland and finally to the sort of quiet, leafy village she'd only seen on television. Viv finds it hard to escape the memory as Gemma pulls the Corsa up at 28 Willow Drive. If not for the sea salt in the air, it could be the same place. Vines around a door, carefully cultivated. A path made of real stone slabs bisecting a grassy front garden. A three-car driveway currently populated with the sort of 4x4 which says, "I don't own a farm, but I could." She lingers by the car, leaning on the bonnet, looking the street up and down. There's a well-kept park dotted with children and dog walkers, a youth centre with tennis courts, and a corner store called The Shop that somehow survived the encroachment of both a Sainsbury's local and a vape shop with a huge glass front and fussy little tables. You could hand Viv pencil and paper and ask her to draw her memory of unattainable upper-middle-class luxury, and it would come out more or less the same. The doorbell plays a tune.
"I'll get it!"
yells a voice somewhere inside. She stands slightly behind Gemma, nervous about what might lurk inside. The house apparently belongs to a family Gemma's helped out from time to time over the years, and Viv's prepared to bet no one Gemma knows, upper middle class neighbourhood or not, can possibly be normal or safe to be around. But when the front door bursts open and an ordinary looking teenage girl looks up at Gemma and immediately leaps in for a hug, Viv doesn't know if that's better or worse than her most monstrous fantasies.
"Auntie Gem!"
the girl says, muffled by Gemma's belly.
"Hey, kid!"
The girl leans away and shouts into the house.
"Mum, it's Auntie Gemma!"
and disentangles herself to run inside.
"Auntie?"
Viv whispers from Gemma's shadow.
"Honorary,"
she says. For an instant, she looks happier than Viv's yet seen her, but she clears her face when an adult woman emerges from a side gate and sweeps Gemma into another hug. She's tall, barely an inch shorter than Gemma, and dressed in immaculate, unstained gardening clothes. Denim shorts, checked shirt, prim little apron, gloves tucked into a belt with flowers on it. A gardener out of a catalogue. They whisper something in each other's ears.
"Of course you can stay,"
the woman exclaims.
"As long as you need."
She turns her attention to Viv, still lurking.
"And who is this fine young lady?"
"Vivian Taylor, this is Eleanor Cox, and that..."
Gemma points, her finger tracking a shape that speeds out of a side room and up the central stairs.
"Was Zoe, which means that Amelia and Tara are probably lurking somewhere. Paul's at work?"
Eleanor nods. "Miss Taylor," she says, "you are very welcome in our home. You have luggage?"
"In the car,"
Gemma says.
"Girls," Eleanor yells.
"Come get Auntie Gemma and her guest suitcases."
Zoe arrives with unnatural speed, accompanied by her twin, or her clone. Viv's not prepared to rule anything out. A third teen jogs down the stairs at what Viv considers more of a sensible, down-to-earth pace, taking them a mere three at a time. The new kid accepts a hug and a top-of-the-head kiss from Gemma as the twins start unloading the car. Viv says, suddenly aware of just how many knives and guns are in their luggage. "Maybe we can help with that."
"You have weapons?"
Eleanor quietly asks Gemma, who nods.
"Do not worry. The girls are discreet."
"Come in."
Gemma guides Viv inside with a hand to the small of her back, leading her through a messy porch. Wellies, raincoats, umbrellas, a shoe tree, all startlingly normal, into an expansive main hall. It is, once again, almost exactly what Viv might picture if asked to describe an opulent family home, except for the sign over the entrance to the kitchen, which reads in cursive, "Eat, pray, love." Viv holds out her arm for support so she can kick off her shoes. Gemma complies, and Eleanor bustles them into the living room while the girls make the luggage disappear upstairs. With the front door closed and the neighbourhood once more shut out, they all move more like Gemma does. fast and graceful. They don't, like Gemma said, zip around like movie vampires, but they seem to accomplish every task with the minimum possible amount of fuss. A whole houseful of the best athletes the world has never seen. Feeling clumsy, Viv allows herself to be pressed into a corner of the largest and most plush of the sofas, and she tucks her legs underneath herself, relieving the pressure on her hip and compressing her bad ankle with her body weight. Another normal room. Viv's mother's living room might have looked like this, if she'd had 10 times as much money. Doilies on the table, a small but modern TV in the corner, an empty fireplace with black iron coal tongs, and trinkets everywhere. The only anomaly is that the leaded windows are lightly frosted, like in a bathroom. The girls come through moments later, the twins, taller, pale-skinned, ice-blonde and lightly freckled, carrying trays laden with china cups and saucers, a jug of milk and an ornate teapot. And the third girl, shorter, dark-skinned, dark-haired and curly, clasping under one arm a biscuit tin of the sort Viv's gran once stored her sewing kit in. She suppresses a moment of homesickness. She has it back at the flat, filled with painkillers.
Amelia and Zoe,
Gemma says, pointing to each twin as they set up the refreshments on the table, and then at the shorter girl.
And Tara.
Hi,
Zoe says. Amelia smiles.
You're human, aren't you?
Tara says, opening the tin for Viv. Actual biscuits inside. Yes, Viv says, selecting a round thing covered in crystallized sugar. You too? For now.
Girls!
Eleanor calls from the archway into the kitchen.
I'm sorry, but Gemma, her guest and I must talk. You have homework? Video games? TikTok?
Ah, one of those mothers who purposefully mispronounces her kids' obsessions just to be mildly irritating. Zoe rolls her eyes theatrically.
You'll come up and see us when you're done, yeah?
She says to Gemma.
Of course,
Gemma says, pretending mortal offence. She intercepts the twins. They hug her, disappear into the hall at sprinter speed, and make almost no sound as they ascend the stairs. Tara evades Gemma's hug with a smirk, places the biscuit tin in her open hands instead, waves at Viv, and follows the twins.
They have homework, Viv says. Summer school?
Eleanor holds up a finger.
How much is Miss Taylor allowed to know?
She asks Gemma. Safely inside, her accent has changed a little to something Viv can't place. She sits and pours the tea while she waits for Gemma to think. Gemma perches protectively on the sofa next to Viv. She places the tin on an appropriately sized doily, snatches out something chocolate-looking and bites off a piece.
Officially,
she says after some chewing.
Nothing. But she's been dragged into our world and now it's out to get her, so she's stuck with us. It's up to you what you want to share with her, but she's trustworthy.
Viv wills herself not to react. That's the second time Gemma's called her trustworthy. She can't imagine what she's done to create that impression. Eleanor looks hard at Viv, who suddenly wonders if she's imagining the scalp-crawling sensation that suddenly comes over her. A second later, Eleanor smiles.
Homework.
Yes, she says.
My children attend our school in the summer and the local human school for the rest of the year.
Viv tests a theory. Tara's human, but Amelia and Zoe
are only terrors,
Gemma mutters.
Are vampires, yes,
Eleanor says.
This kind of family hasn't existed for a long time,
Gemma says.
With vampire children in, I mean.
Eleanor sips her tea, prompting Viv to consider rearranging herself so she can fetch her own. Before she can, Gemma leans forward and fusses with the pot and the thin china cups, asking the usual questions by holding up various receptacles. Milk? Sugar? A nod and a shake and Viv has her tea. She hopes like hell she doesn't spill it.
Paul and I wanted children since we first met,
Eleanor says.
And somehow, Benjamin, you know him?
I know of him, Viv says.
Lovely man. He heard and inducted us into his pilot program. Sort of an experiment. Vampire families for the first time in centuries.
Viv sips. I'm sorry, she says. I think I just assumed vampires couldn't have children.
We can,
Gemma says.
but it's not been considered wise for a long time. Centuries. Vamp kids can be difficult. Imagine a human 6-year-old having a temper tantrum. Now transpose that onto a child almost as strong as, say, me, but hasn't learned how to control it, how to hide it. How not to bite the other children just because they're hungry. You'd have to raise them in isolation, and that's not good for children, vampire or human. Hence Benjamin's initiative. Raising a human child and a vampire child together.
You mean, Viv says, startled, picturing a child leaping from cot to cot, fangs out. Tara was...
She was perfectly safe,
Eleanor interrupts.
From the moment she joined our family, Miss Taylor, the day I am no longer faster or more cunning than a pair of infants is the day the ground can finally claim me. Amelia and Zoe took to Tara extremely quickly and were bonded with her by the time they were all 3 years old. And now they are co-conspirators in every fiendish teenage plot you can imagine. But a danger to one another, they are not.
So what? Tara teaches Amelia and Zoe how to be around humans without snacking on them? Eleanor laughs.
That she accomplishes simply with her presence. What she was supposed to teach them was how to get along with humans, how to socialize, how to share interests with them. The intention was for her to make other friends at school and thus inveigle her sisters into human social groups.
She looks wistfully into her teacup.
But the three of them are inseparable. They have a handful of, I suppose, acquaintances, but no true bonds except with each other. I believe the human teachers call them A to Z. It's created terrible seating problems in some of their classes. Now, Gemma,
she adds in quite a different tone.
What's going on? Why has this young lady been, as you say, dragged into our world?
Keep us back,
Gemma says. Eleanor tenses, swears under her breath.
Tell me everything, and remember,
she adds brightly,
you're both of you perfectly safe here. Only Benjamin and Helena have this address. As long as you need it, this is your home. And Gemma, dear, we have ample blood on hand. You won't need to hunt.
God, Eleanor, thank you. You have no idea how sick I am of rabbits.
It's been nearly 2 years since Gemma last spent time with the Coxes, but the girls, despite being almost 14 now, don't seem much different. Amelia and Zoe buzz around Gemma with the energy and speed of young vampires with a mild caffeine addiction, while Tara sits in the corner, providing indulgent smiles, amused commentary, and a small pile of shortbread biscuits she must have swiped from the tin when no one was looking. The only real difference since the last time is the girls' advancing years and improved powers of persuasion seem finally to have moved Eleanor and Paul to buy them smartphones, so the book Tara is ignoring is electronic now. Gemma thinks of the drive here. The urge to shrink down in her seat had been overwhelming, and even with four walls, a massive garden, and a pair of protective vampire teens and their ancient monster of a mother between her and her hometown, she's still tense. She didn't grow up around Willow Drive. Her family lived on the other side of town, inland, without quite so many picturesque little parks and probably by now more down-market vape shops. But while Gemma managed post-mortem to escape, she knows from stalking Facebook that a lot of her peers never did. And it's not impossible some of them could have gone far enough up in the world to end up somewhere like Willow Drive. Another rule of vampire kind, doubtless spelled out in capital letters in the handbook, is that people from your old life can't be permitted to see you after a certain point, lest they notice a general absence of wrinkles and grey hair. At 40, Gemma can probably still just about get away with it. There are definitely 40-year-old humans running around these days who can pass for younger. As Helena sometimes points out with much satisfaction, it's the 21st century. People moisturise now. But it's pushing it. Being seen would put her uncomfortably close to a rules infraction. But that's the excuse. The real reason Gemma's heart started beating faster as soon as they passed the town welcome sign and hasn't stopped since is that Gemma had been a boy here, had been made to grow up as one, had been deliberately and insistently made into one. Anyone still around would probably prefer that she'd stayed that way.
Open your mouth,
Zoe commands, and Gemma complies, clearing her head of unhelpful thoughts.
Go, moi,
Zoe says. Gemma goes, moi.
Lovely.
I can't believe you're letting them do this to you, Vivian says.
Do you want to try and stop them?
Gemma says, the twins pinned her as soon as she came upstairs and threatened her with violence and eyelash curlers until she agreed to be beautified. Vivian laughs in response. She's sitting next to Tara in a pile of beanbags in the middle of the room, wincing occasionally when she has to change position, but trying to hide it. If the twins have noticed she's in pain, they haven't mentioned it. A rare display of tact on Zoe's part. So Gemma's inclined to think she, at least, is simply oblivious, but Tara definitely hasn't. Vivian's clearly got a lot of experience hiding her discomfort from other humans. Her pain is hard to watch, doubly so, because Gemma now knows she hates being seen that way. It's a shame Gemma and Helena were perhaps the worst possible candidates to demonstrate the benefits of blood thrall, or she might have consented to be healed by now. She remembers Helena's hand in her hair and twitches, earning a scowl from Zoe.
She needs the practice anyway,
Amelia volunteers.
I'm training,
Zoe insists and leans around to say to Vivian.
I'm going to be a makeup artist.
Oh, you're not going to work for the corporation?
Vampire Incorporated? That'd be a complete waste of time. Gemma, close your eyes.
It's not called that, is it?
It'd be a lot more fun if it was,
Gemma says, closing her eyes. Zoe starts work with her brushes, which feels novel to Gemma, a habitual finger painter who steps up to a sponge if she needs to look posh.
It's called BTCF Associates at the moment, I think. I can never remember initialisms. It's pretending to be the big insurance arm of the big vampire multinational.
She waves a hand idly to say, who cares?
Zoe and I are both going to work in public as soon as we can,
Amelia says quietly. Her part in Gemma's beautification has been mainly to shuttle supplies to her twin, and now she curls up on the soft stool by Gemma's elbow, knees tucked under her chin. Not you, Tara? Seen enough humans, Tara sniffs. No offence, Vivian. None taken? I'm training to fight, she says.
Just with a local human for now, but when I've transitioned, Mum says I can train with Aunt Gemma. Does she now?
Gemma says and makes a mental note to learn a fighting style that won't make Tara's mother mad. Transitioned, Vivian says, looking at Gemma.
Not like that,
Gemma says as Zoe laughs.
Changed, turned, vamped.
You're really going to be a vampire?
Of course,
Tara says, surprised.
She's family,
Amelia insists quietly.
She's our sister.
Right after uni, Dad's already got permission, but I have to be old enough. Tara shakes her head, irritated. You don't want to give it a few more years? Vivian says, grow a little older. She points to Gemma, who is allowing Amelia to lower a wig onto her head, pin it and brush it. She was turned at 21, and between you and me, I don't think she's all there. Vivian taps her temple, grinning.
I can hear you, Vivian Taylor,
Gemma says from beneath the wig.
And I'm only not retaliating because it would mess up all this hard work. It's not exactly safe being human,
Tara says.
And besides, I want to take care of Amelia and Zoe for once.
She looks away from Vivian's frown and grins at Gemma.
Oh yeah, how many fights did you get into this year?
Gemma makes a show of remembering and holds up two hands with fingers extended.
Ha!
Tara says, grinning at the twins.
I win!
Ugh! Amelia grumbles, shoving Gemma gently. Gemma's glad she probably doesn't shove her human classmates like that, or they might burst.
Ames has to take out the rubbish all week,
Zoe explains.
She guessed 4.
Amelia sticks her tongue out at Zoe, throws the hairbrush at her. Zoe catches it without effort and hops off the stool. She settles down on the beanbags, intertwining her fingers with Tara's, whispers something too quiet for Gemma to hear into Tara's ear. They both snort with laughter.
9 fights, Vivian says, and here I thought this week was a big deal for you. Yeah, well, 2 of them involved you,
Gemma complains.
And it's been a busy year. Have you seen her fight?
Tara asks Vivian. No, Vivian says. Gemma raises her eyebrows at her, trying to silently ask, are you okay to talk about this? Vivian smiles in response and continues. The first time I was unconscious, and the second time she made sure I was out of the house.
I did break a TV over the guy's head, though,
Gemma says. Tara giggles.
One of those big old ones.
The guy. Was it Cooper?
Tara says. Gemma sighs and suffers a bop on the head from Zoe, whose ruse she interrupted.
You shouldn't know about him, she says.
She listens,
Amelia whispers, scandalised, pointing at Zoe.
At the top of the stairs. She asked,
Zoe replies, pointing in turn at Tara, who adopts an expression of injured innocence.
Yes, fine,
Gemma says.
It was him, but no questions about him, or your mum really will be mad.
Fine.
Where did they happen, the fights?
Tara asks.
And that's not a question about Cooper,
she adds before Gemma can open her mouth. Vivian hesitates for long enough that Gemma almost cuts in, but eventually she says quietly and with her eyes on the floor,
First one, it was out near a bar, in an alley. Gemma saved my life, but I ran away from her. So second time, he came for me in my home.
You ran away from Gemma,
Zoe says. Gemma tries to give her a warning look, but she's not paying attention.
I didn't know, Vivian says, even more quietly, about any of it, about vampires. I didn't know.
Maybe we should give her a break,
Gemma suggests.
It's been a hard couple of days for her.
Tara nods seriously. Zoe snorts and Amelia repositions herself so she can sit next to Vivian. She squeezes her shoulder. Vivian jumps but smiles at her and shuffles closer before Amelia can pull away.
Did you decide what you're going to do, Amelia?
Gemma says, changing the subject with maximum clumsiness.
I'm thinking about becoming a hairdresser,
she says, turning her attention to Vivian's hair.
So I can work with Zoe and Tara can be our celebrity bodyguard?
She adds, grinning. Vivian laughs, sounding slightly strained.
Sorry, she says. They're just not jobs I associate with vampires.
Most of the people at the corporation have desk jobs, Gemma says. Not much call for a creature of the night in the 21st century.
Yeah, but we'll only get desk jobs when we can't go public anymore,
Zoe says, spraying Gemma in the face without warning and coating her tongue with something unpleasantly fragrant.
I want to have fun while I can.
What do you mean? Vivian asks.
We're all three of us going to stop changing, at least to human eyes,
Zoe says, shrugging.
Tara's going to transition to become a vampire and Amy and I are going to finish growing up. So if I want to do this professionally...
She squirts a bit of setting spray into the air for emphasis.
Then I need to start as soon as possible. I've got Insta and TikTok accounts ready, and when we're 16, we're going public. And if we can't go viral, Dad knows some people who can probably get me in somewhere.
The very, very old boys network,
Gemma says, grinning.
We have until we're about Gemma's age,
Amelia says.
And then we'll have to go stealth.
Are you stealth? Vivian asks Gemma and adds...
What? When she laughs.
I'm stealth by default,
Gemma says.
Never been public. If I ever get exposed, like if I end up on the news or something, or I need to get a public-facing job for some reason, then it's standard rules. I claim to be 21, I get forged documents to support that, and a 15 to 20 year clock starts ticking.
Or I get quietly killed, she thinks.
Huh. Vivian says, angling her neck so whatever Amelia's doing with her hair,
braiding it, can continue. That actually sucks.
Yeah,
Gemma says.
We live practically forever, but we don't, by necessity, get out much. All these humans in lockdown living like vampires and moaning about it,
she adds, smirking.
Okay,
Zoe says, slapping Gemma on the arm.
We're done!
Gemma makes a show of inspecting herself in the lighted mirror. The wig looks nice. It's in wine red, has a fringe of the sort Gemma's always wanted to try, and is considerably longer and tidier than her natural hair. Zoe, meanwhile, has applied a restrained and tasteful makeup job, which de-emphasises a lot of the things Gemma hates about her face and draws attention instead to her eyes and mouth, the good bits. It's gratifying enough that when Zoe pushes her to vacate the chair, she complies and steps aside, beckoning to Vivian. Vivian says, what?
She wants to do you next,
Tara says.
Please!
Zoe says, running over to Vivian and tugging on her arm. Amelia stands a moment later and they both pull ineffectually at her. It's reassuring. They're both of them able to pick up anyone in the room with one hand, so it's nice to see them pretending to be as weak as they look. Human school's been good for them. Also, if they're not actually lifting her, they're probably not hurting her. They're not gonna eat me, are they?
No,
Gemma says.
Girls, don't eat Vivian. She's my friend.
But we're hungry.
Zoe whines and pops her fangs for effect.
If you're gonna eat anyone, eat me.
But then we'd have to do what you tell us.
Zoe,
Gemma says as Vivian reluctantly consents to be dragged to the makeup chair.
You've never done what you're told in your life. A little blood isn't going to do anything to change that.
I'm sorry about Zoe and Amelia,
Tara says, putting Viv's mug of tea on the little metal table and settling into the wicker chair next to Viv's. Viv notes, tea in mugs and not ridiculous china things when Mum's not around.
Well, mainly Zoe.
Amelia had wanted to put a wig on her, but acquiesced when Viv demurred. Zoe, however, had pressed the matter and Tara, apparently sensing a teen vampire incident, stepped between Viv and the twins and escorted her back downstairs to the conservatory. At least Zoe's makeup job is nice. Viv doesn't have the energy to do it herself much anymore.
It's fine,
Viv says, smiling.
What's so bad about a wig?
Tara asks, without apparent rancour. It's hard to explain. Tara shrugs, smiles.
Try me?
Really?
Mum says I don't talk to other humans enough,
Tara says.
But you're interesting.
Viv glances back at her at that, but nothing on Tara's face suggests anything other than simple curiosity. Other humans are boring, are they? Viv wants suddenly to defend her people, but holds her tongue. Who knows what being raised by vampires does to your head? She stares instead out of the windows, feeling exposed in the glass conservatory, as if Cooper might suddenly burst through the fence at the far end of the garden. I'm disabled. Not in a way that's always visible, and definitely not in a way that's always predictable. Viv pauses, organises her thoughts. She still hasn't yet made total sense of the flash of panic she experienced when Amelia started sorting through her wigs. I have to be careful, she says, thinking it through as she goes. I have to plan every movement, you know? I wasn't always disabled. I remember what it was like to say, reach for a mug of tea without really thinking about it. But these days it's a series of calculations. So I go for the mug. She leans forward and does so, winces at a twinge from her hip. And I have to judge, before I pick it up, how weak am I right now? How does my wrist feel? How's my back? Have I had a spasm lately? And when I'm done drinking a bit of tea, am I going to be able to put the mug back down again? Because that means leaning forward with a weight in my hands, much harder than leaning back into a chair. Am I basically going to drink this tea or wear it?
And here comes Zoe,
Tara says.
Vampire beauty queen and pushy as hell, never met a wall she couldn't walk through, doesn't understand why you don't want to do something that seems so simple to her.
Yeah, I have to do things at my own pace. Never climb a mountain you can't get back down, and I haven't exactly been in control lately.
Everything's like that. Every day.
Everything. Walking, driving, working, getting dressed. I never put on a piece of clothing I think I might have trouble taking off. And a wig pinned in place, that's
trouble.
Exactly.
Is it so bad with Gemma around?
Tara says.
You could ask her for help and...
Come on, Tara, Viv says. Your sisters could beat up Captain America. Surely you don't want them doing everything for you just because they're faster and stronger than you are.
For now?
Yeah, for now.
But I get it.
Yeah.
Did Gemma say Amelia and Zoe could beat up Captain America?
She said she could. Tara grins.
I think she lowballed it.
That'd be so funny to watch, though, Viv says, slurping on her tea.
Sorry about my sisters,
Tara says again.
I love them more than anything, and they are careful about my human restrictions, but they can still be a bit vampire-y sometimes. You know how it is.
Not really. I've known Gemma less than 2 days, and she didn't even tell me about vampires until last night. I'm just taking everything as it comes. Tara thinks.
I'm surprised you're not running screaming.
I mean, I did. The first time. I got away from Gemma and went home. Big mistake.
How did you do that? I couldn't outrun Ames and Zoe even with a 10-minute head start.
She had me in handcuffs, which I took offence at, so... Viv grins nastily. I waited for her to fall asleep and dislocated my thumb. Slipped right out. She flexes her hand. Still hurts, actually. Stupid idea in retrospect. But yeah, this place, shockingly normal compared to everything else so far. Tara laughs.
We're not that normal. I've been to human homes. We're not much like them, really.
Eat, pray, love.
Dad got it at the gift shop when we went to London for the open day. He thinks it's hilarious.
Dads are dads everywhere, I guess, Viv says, even when they're vampires. Your dad is a vampire, isn't he? Tara nods.
He made the transition a year before we were born.
It's still strange to Viv how the people, vampires, talk so casually about, well, dying. Tara actually wants it.
Hey,
Tara says,
are you okay?
Viv's face must have betrayed her thoughts. Just disappointed, she says, covering. I've seen Gemma's place and now I've seen yours and I've even spent a night in a stupid travel lodge.
It's okay, we're allowed to swear.
And people keep talking about this very human-sounding corporation. Where are the gothic castles, the vats of blood?
We've got blood in the freezer if you want to see some,
Tara says with a smirk.
Like Aunt Gemma said, we're not creatures of the night anymore.
Boring?
Hey,
says a voice from the door. It's Amelia and Zoe with appropriately apologetic faces on.
Sorry about before.
It's fine. Come sit. Where's Gemma?
In the kitchen with Mum,
Zoe says, perching on the edge of Tara's wicker chair.
They're collaborating on dinner.
Vampires eat dinner?
We don't have to, but Tara does and we can if we want to. Mum says we're having pasta, which is nice.
She'll make pasta fangs with the penne, Tara says. Just you wait.
She makes claws with her fingers.
Dripping with tomato blood.
Zoe hisses at her.
Can I ask you something?
Amelia says, arranging herself cross-legged on the floor by the window as her sisters play bicker.
Is Gemma okay? We don't get to talk to her much, not even online.
Viv blinks. I don't know, really, she says. I haven't known her very long.
She's lonely.
Yeah, Viv says. Cooper doesn't go after women with a surfeit of close friends and family, she remembers. He picks women like Gemma, women like her. I think she might be.
She's looking after you,
Amelia says.
That's why you're here and she likes you. She kept smiling at you when you weren't looking. Do you think you could look after her as well?
I can try, Viv says, but she's thinking... The ordinary teenage girl sitting on the floor and smiling shyly at her is a fucking vampire. So's Eleanor, so's Zoe, so's Gemma. Surrounded by these people with their lovely house and their career ambitions and their tin of shortbread biscuits, it's been too easy for Viv to forget that all of them, Tara excluded, for now, have it in them to become what Gemma became last night in the hotel. Their lives, their experiences are so radically different from Viv's that they seriously think they can ask her to look after a person who might, after a bad day, degrade into a weeping, shaking monster barely able to control its own bloodlust. To put her head in the lion's mouth because the lion is lonely. Eat, pray, love, not just a bad joke.
Just please watch out for her if you can.
Amelia says. Viv nods absently. On the other hand, Tara's been here 14 years and hasn't been eaten yet. She looks back out through the window at the immaculately cut grass. In the reflection, Zoe is menacing Tara with imaginary pasta fangs. Gemma's chopping vegetables. It's actually kind of fun to go all out with vampire speed and strength against a pile of carrots, onion and celery, and Eleanor said not to worry about the broken cutting board.
How's she doing?
Eleanor says, preparing the pan.
Vivian? It's hard to tell, she bottles up a lot.
Huh, Eleanor says.
I wonder who else I know who does that.
Gemma turns her best innocent face on Eleanor.
I have no idea,
she says, deadpan.
Are you thinking of going to see Amanda while you're in town?
Gemma carefully puts down the knife, glares at the vegetables.
Maybe.
It's her birthday soon, isn't it?
I can't. Mum might.
Your mother hasn't visited the grave in over 10 years,
Eleanor says quietly.
Oh, come here.
She bats the broken cutting board aside and pulls Gemma into a hug, rubbing her shoulder blades gently. Gemma lets herself be held, relaxes into it, places her head on Eleanor's shoulders. It's only when the tears wet her chin that she realizes she's been crying.
How has she not visited?
Gemma whispers.
Doesn't she care?
I don't think she does, no,
Eleanor says.
She's old and the old, they forget people sometimes, for the sake of their own sanity. Don't forget, she lost both her children, and no matter how ill-informed she was about you, that does something to a person. Take it from an expert.
Gemma tightens her hold.
There, child. It's okay.
Amanda shouldn't be dead. Even after 2 decades, it just doesn't seem possible. She should have children of her own by now, just like she wanted, terrors like Amelia, Tara and Zoe, making a merry nuisance of themselves, little versions of her, kind, funny and impulsive. Gemma aches for a life lost and lives never lived, and the role she would have got to play alongside them. She loses track of time for a while. When she comes back, she's empty but calm and chastened, ducking away from Eleanor with unavoidable embarrassment despite her reassurances.
Sorry.
Don't you dare apologize, Gemma. You don't have to be strong in front of me.
Eleanor pulls her back in for just long enough to kiss her gently on the forehead before finally letting her go.
Now, pass me the vegetables.
Gemma sniffs, smiles, squares her shoulders.
Right,
she says.
Meatballs.
A short while later, the front door bangs shut.
It's Paul,
Eleanor says.
He took a half day when I told him you were here. Go, I can finish up.
So Gemma hangs up her bite the cook apron. How many kitschy souvenirs has Paul bought? No wonder the girls can't have humans over. And gives Eleanor a final one-armed hug on the way out and finds herself dragged into Paul Cox's whirlwind of energy. The man must be either an amazing physics lecturer or an extremely tiring one. His jacket has ironic professor elbow pads sewn on.
Gemma!
He booms, dumping his bulging satchel.
It's been years. How have you been?
Mostly bored,
Gemma says, picking up his bag. He'll just leave it in the porch if someone doesn't move it for him.
With occasional bouts of extreme stress.
Ben still working you hard?
Mostly through Helena.
Dad!
Zoe calls.
We have another guest too.
Vivian's in the conservatory with the girls, sat in one of the wicker chairs and looking mildly harassed. She waves and offers a smile to which Paul grins broadly.
This is Vivian Taylor,
Tara says.
She's human, so be nice,
Zoe adds. Paul takes her in.
Oh no,
he mugs.
Another Zoomer to perplex and horrify me.
Paul,
Gemma says.
She's 26, a millennial like us.
Vivian shrugs and Gemma quickly counts in her head. She is a millennial, right? Yes, just about.
Oh, that makes her a young millennial then. Still confusing. Not like you and me, Gemma. We're geriatric millennials.
Paul's only a couple of years younger than Gemma, and when they first met, while he was still human, he was extremely excited to meet a vampire peer, the only other vampires in his life being his fiancée Eleanor, Helena and Benjamin, all of whom had had at some point or other to be patiently shown how to work an MP3 player.
Gemma says that term is extremely stupid,
Eleanor yells from the kitchen.
And she's older than you, Paul, so she's right.
That's not how vampires count generations anyway,
Gemma says. But you said, Vivian says, in the car.
I say a lot of things.
Vivian Taylor, Paul says, it was lovely to meet you. Now, Gemma, come with me. I have something you're going to want to see.
Oh?
Gemma accidentally expressed an interest in Paul's room full of vintage electronics back when the girls were still infants, and now whenever she visits, she's forced to either accept a tour of the latest additions to his collection or let him down gently, and thus far she's not had the heart to pick option B.
I found a Nintendo 64 at a jumble sale. It nearly works too!
Gemma shrugs and meets Vivian's eyes. She nods, which Gemma takes as reassurance that the girls aren't bothering her too much. So she consents to be dragged away to the den to witness a miraculous Nintendo 64 that does indeed very nearly play Mario Kart. Viv and Gemma are finally unpacked in the room with all the beanbags and the only other double bed. It's apparently where the girls normally sleep. They have their own rooms, but Zoe said a little sheepishly on the way back up the stairs, why bother spending all that time apart? Viv, an only child, wonders what growing up around people who actually want you around might be like. It seems to involve at least a little play fighting with pasta. Gemma lounges in the middle of the room on the largest beanbag. Viv's collapsed nearby, resigned to using all her remaining energy to digest an extremely large plate of meatballs. Gemma's taken off the wig, placed it with much care and ceremony on one of Amelia's wig stands, but her makeup still looks nice in the low light. There's a shine around her eyes that extends a little way down her nose. Her whole face seems to glow just a little. Gemma catches her eye and grins. Tara and Zoe are sprawled on the bed and Amelia's lying on the floor with her head in Gemma's lap, tapping arrhythmically on Gemma's outstretched foot and occasionally showing her funny pictures on her phone. They're bloody vampires, Viv reminds herself, but does it really actually matter? Tara doesn't seem to think so. Can I ask a weird question? Viv says. Zoe responds with a twirl of her finger. Hurry up and ask. The blood you had with dinner, where did it come from?
You mean?
Tara asks, smirking and switching into a V is for vampire accent.
Was it mine?
Viv had been surprised how good meatballs made by a pair of vampires could be. Eleanor served it from two saucepans, which turned out to be because in one of them the tomato sauce was enhanced with human blood. And where Viv and Tara had lemonade, the vampires had more blood. In glass tumblers, with little dancing rabbits on them. Viv pointed them out to Gemma, and she laughed so hard she nearly choked on a meatball. So, Viv says into the amused silence, was it yours?
Nope,
Tara says and returns to scrolling on her phone.
Most vampires don't hunt,
Gemma says.
Not like I have to. They get deliveries. Mostly animal blood. Guess how many slaughterhouses the corporation owns. But some are human. People donate for money. No one died for our dinner tonight. At least,
she adds in a whisper.
That's what I've always been told.
Amelia looks up at her and swats her lightly.
It's the truth,
she scolds.
No one needs to die to feed a vampire,
Zoe says.
That's just prejudice. We can survive off animals if we need to. A bloody lot of animals,
Gemma mumbles.
And if it ever came to it, we've been trained to take only what we need from a human. And we'd ask permission, of course. Zoe fed off me once,
Tara said.
It was weird. She's my sister. She gave me a cookie after. You really don't mind us taking the room,
Gemma says.
Nah, we'll just go into Amelia's, probably, Tara says. It's the tidiest. Actual floor on the floor.
You say that like it's...
Amelia interrupts herself with a yawn.
A bad thing.
Go to bed, girls, Gemma says lazily.
You can't.
Yawn.
Make us.
Your mum can.
It takes a few minutes to persuade the girls to leave, which is followed by echoey giggling from the bathroom across the hall and a series of slammed doors as Tara and Zoe collect their bedclothes and converge on Amelia's nice, tidy room. And then Viv and Gemma are alone in relative quiet. They have a bathroom to themselves, an ensuite, and Gemma, from her beanbag throne, gestures towards it.
You want to go first?
She says, sounding like she's ready to fall asleep. Viv tests her hip and ankle. Better than this morning, but getting up is going to be an issue, one she prefers not to have witnesses for.
No, you go.
Okay.
Gemma pushes up from horizontal with all the easy grace Viv's come to be irritated by and starts collecting bedclothes and her shower kit from a suitcase. You don't need to lock it this time, Viv says. I'm not going to come in after you or anything, but I get it now, why you locked it this morning. You don't have to.
Okay.
Gemma says, enigmatic, and shuts herself in. Reopens the bathroom door a second later and adds,
Thanks.
Viv wants to fall asleep right there on the beanbag, but that's an excellent way to end up with even more back pain, and she's got to wash the bloody makeup off as well. So she crawls with utmost dignity across the floor until she reaches the makeup chair and uses it to climb slowly up to a sitting position. Lying down in the first place was an idiot move. She is so absolutely and completely bored of being in pain all the time. Gemma emerges a little while later, industriously toweling her hair. She's wearing what looks like a sports bra and a pair of shorts under a dressing gown, and she smiles weakly when Viv looks her up and down.
Eleanor packed a load of nightgowns, which... No,
she explains, and frowns when Viv doesn't react.
What's up?
Gemma, Viv says, stalling for time, picking at her fingernails, wondering if she's really going to ask about this.
Yeah?
If I drank some of your blood, I wouldn't get weird, would I?
You mean, would you want to do with me what I did with Eleanor?
Yeah. Almost definitely not. What would happen? Gemma throws her towel over the back of a chair, half a room away. Annoying.
It depends how much you drink. A couple of sips and you might feel slightly more favourable towards me. A few big gulps and you get a bit euphoric, probably be inclined to do whatever I say.
And? Would you tell me to do things?
No, that would be really, really fucked up.
You'd just leave me alone?
Yeah, of course.
Viv takes a deep breath, deep enough for the movement of her chest to hurt her hip. Pain makes the decision for her. Will you heal me? Gemma nods and sits on the edge of the bed facing Viv. She raises her wrist to her mouth and is about to bite when she pauses.
Before we do this, she says, I have to ask you something.
Viv nods.
Do you want me to go sleep in the den?
What?
Do you want me to go sleep in the den? There's a sofa down there and blankets, although it's still pretty hot, so...
Why would I want you to sleep in the den? Viv says. Gemma just looks at her and suddenly Viv understands. Is this a vamp thing or a trans thing?
Pick one. Both.
I don't want you to sleep in the den. We'll share the bed. It's massive.
I could sleep on the floor.
Gemma, we'll share the bed. It's not a big deal. You're not all fangy like you were last night, and I really, absolutely do not care that you're trans. I promise.
You're really sure?
Jesus, Gemma, haven't you ever shared a bed with a friend before? She looks away.
No.
Oh.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's okay.
We can share the bed.
Right,
Gemma holds up her wrist and extends her fangs.
We doing this?
Viv nods. The blood is disgusting, like drinking liquid pennies, but the sensation of it flowing over her tongue and suffusing the roof of her mouth is like nothing Viv's ever imagined. She puts both hands around Gemma's wrist as she drinks, as if pure desperation can prevent her from ever withdrawing her arm, and she takes mouthful after mouthful after mouthful. For a split second, each gulp sits in her mouth like warm honey, but her body is hungry for it, aches for it, needs it so completely that it draws it inside her through her tongue and the lining of her throat and the full bulb of her belly. She feels with every blessed drop her pain and fatigue falling away like clouds below a climbing aeroplane, and Gemma gently unpins Viv's fingers and loosens her jaw with a thumb. She steps back and sits on the bed. Disappointed, Viv wants to reach out and grab at her, but as soon as she stands out of the stool, the sheer lightness of her step stops her in abject wonder. She's not just healed. She's alive for the first time ever. Jesus fucking Christ, Gemma! She says, her voice echoes and turns in on itself like a kaleidoscope.
How are you feeling?
Like I could... like I could jump over a building, like I could fly. Is this what it's like being a vampire?
No,
Gemma says, and Viv hears something in her voice, and for the first time since receiving her gift, looks at her face. Her beautiful, glowing face, her damp hair in halo from the bathroom light, and Gemma, kind Gemma, sweet Gemma, Gemma who saved her life twice over, Gemma who needs her help, is looking with wet eyes anywhere but at her.
That's what the blood high is like. You'll come down.
She looks so sad, like she thinks she's done a terrible thing, and she needs to know. She needs to know that everything is all right, that everything is just completely fine, that Viv is healed and alive, and...
Vivian,
Gemma says, but stops there, squashing whatever she's about to say. Still not looking at, not looking at, not looking at Viv. Are you okay? Viv says, and thought is action, and she's sitting next to Gemma, putting a hand on her shoulder. She'll find whatever is hurting her friend, and...
I don't like seeing this. I think I gave you too much.
Gemma, I can't believe you had this in you the whole time. You're magic, Gemma. You're a fucking witch, a good witch, kind and sweet and beautiful and just... Fuck, Gemma! Holy fucking fuck!
This won't last...
Gemma says, standing and holding Viv down on the bed so she can't stand with her and go with her and take care of her and do whatever she needs.
I'm going to the kitchen to have a little blood.
Viv watches her walk away from the bed and wants to cry as she does, feeling the tears rolling down her cheek and striking the floor and catching them in her hands. And she almost stands up, but she bites her lip and the sensation of her teeth indenting the skin is so interesting and detailed and so real. She almost misses Gemma closing the bedroom door, and she wants nothing more than to take away whatever makes Gemma sad. But she thinks maybe Gemma wants to be alone for a while, and whatever she wants, whatever she needs, she should get. So she falls backwards onto the bed, giggling, still softly biting her lip, and starts running her hands up and down her body, feeling unbroken skin and uninjured joints and muscles that tingle when she touches them, and skin like silk. After a while, Viv starts to feel a bit silly.
Gemma sniffs, looking up from her mug of warm blood as Eleanor, moving with unnatural clumsiness so Gemma will hear her coming, leans against the kitchen counter.
Sorry if I woke you with the microwave,
Gemma says.
There's cinnamon in the cupboard if you want some,
Eleanor says, pointing at the mug. Gemma nods and Eleanor fetches it.
And don't worry about waking me. I haven't really needed sleep for a few hundred years now.
God, Gemma says, sprinkling cinnamon on her blood.
What do you do while Paul's asleep?
Eleanor grins.
I have a Kindle, a phone, and a very high score in Tetris. What's the matter?
Gemma sighs.
I healed Vivian. She asked, and I tried not to give her too much, but I'm not good at this, being around humans. You seem to be doing a fine job so far. Ha! Last night I almost went feral, and then I was intimate with Helena in front of her.
Helena fed you and didn't calm you immediately?
Elena asks. Gemma nods. I'm going to kill that child. Despite herself, Gemma almost smiles. It's funny to be around someone old enough to think of Helena that way.
I look like a monster, she says. Cut myself up all over to stay in control.
And yet, you have not put a single scratch on Vivian yourself.
Of course not.
Gemma's indignation peters out in the face of Eleanor's patient gaze.
Give yourself some credit, she says. You expect to be bad at this, but here she is and...
Eleanor smiles.
I think I hear laughter. Blood eye, more stupid vampire bullshit.
She asked, and it will pass. She will forgive you.
I hope so.
Gemma drinks in silence. Reheated human blood with cinnamon is better than warm milk and cookies. She yawns.
Go on upstairs, Eleanor says. I hear her showering. Be there for her when she is done. I'll clean your mug.
Thank you, Eleanor, Gemma says, rising.
Oh, child,
she says, pulling Gemma in again and holding her for a moment or two. Gemma feels her eyes moisten and blinks hard to chase it away. Eleanor kisses Gemma on the cheek.
She's a beautiful young lady, she says, releasing her. Nobody would blame you for falling for her.
I would, Gemma whispers back and heads for the stairs. She re-enters the bedroom only moments before Vivian opens the bathroom door. She too has eschewed Helena's selection of flowery nightgowns in favour of shorts and a tank top. Guiltily, Gemma wonders if it's a genuine preference or the thrall making her choose what Gemma did.
Hi, Vivian says. How are you feeling?
Gemma asks. She's sat as far away from the bed and the ensuite as she can manage, perched on Amelia's stool.
Kinda silly, Vivian smiles. What did you say that was? Blood high?
Gemma nods.
Never felt anything like it. Sorry if I was weird. It's absolutely fine. I'm still several points above you on the weirdness scale.
Vivian frowns.
Huh. I was expecting to feel all command me mistress, but you look like the same old Gemma to me. Good. I'm not going to say anything that could be interpreted as an instruction all the same.
No, Vivian laughs. Not going to order me around, make me your...
No.
Then come to bed, Vivian says. I'm tired as hell.
You sure you're okay with sharing?
Vivian gives her a look. You already asked me that, before I drank your blood and got all... Woo! She waggles her fingers. It's fine. Come to bed. Gemma shrugs off her dressing gown and ties up her hair. It's not quite dry. Whatever. It can do what it wants overnight and she can deal with it in the morning. Vivian's already climbing in, moving more quickly than Gemma's used to, as the blood cushions her body against whatever Vivian normally fears she might do to it by moving incautiously. Gemma stretches, checks her phone, no messages, and taps out a quick status update for Helena before she joins Vivian in the bed, carefully leaving a large expanse of empty mattress between the two of them. Vivian shuffles a little closer anyway. How do vampires count generations? She says.
What?
Earlier, when Mr. Cox was talking about Zoomers, you said that's not how vampires count generations.
Oh, yeah, vamp generations are really long. You, me, the kids, Paul, we're all surveillance generation. Helena's an electrical native. Benjamin's industrial generation. I don't actually know about Eleanor, except I think it's a longer one. Things didn't change as fast back then. Peat bog generation or castles and moats generation or something.
How old is she?
North of 900.
God, really?
She just told me she doesn't need to sleep anymore.
Fuck.
She plays Tetris.
Vivian shakes her head and grins at Gemma. Wow, I thought Cooper was the oldest.
One of the oldest. Eleanor doesn't count, anyway, not to our lot. She's from somewhere in Europe.
From one of the bloodlines down in what's now Germany, I think.
Huh. Hey, Gemma.
Yeah?
Personal question.
Yeah?
It's about trans stuff.
That's okay.
You sure?
I'm sure.
Do you still need to take hormones?
No. The body likes to return to how it was when you were turned, except all healed up from whatever horrible shit happened to you before you got vamped. I don't know how it can be so selective. Magic, probably.
What if a trans person was turned before they had a chance to go on hormones?
I don't actually know for sure. It'd suck, but you might be able to get somewhere by taking huge amounts of the stuff, like 10 times what a human would. Medicine and things do affect us, and if we're not grievously injured, we return to our base state pretty slowly.
So, not a complete disaster for a trans vampire, then?
It's only a guess.
Do the family know?
But I'm trans? Yeah. Eleanor told them.
Oh. How did they take it?
None of them are bothered by it. Eleanor yelled at Helena for outing me and made me a blood cake to help me feel better.
Do I want to know what that is?
It's a cupcake with blood in it.
You people are horrific.
Thanks.
I'm sharing a bed with a horror movie monster.
Don't be so transphobic.
Vivian kicks her, lightly. You really love the girls, don't you? Vivian says.
I do.
I see how happy you are.
It's a little like being with Amanda again. She would have got on with Zoe like a house on fire. They would have been unstoppable.
I'm sorry about your sister.
It's okay. Her birthday's coming up. Eleanor suggested I visit her grave while we're in town.
I think I will. I'll come with you if you want.
That would be nice.
God, it's so weird that you're warm.
What do you mean?
You're a vampire. Aren't you supposed to be cold? But you're really warm.
Not all of me's warm.
How are your feet so cold?
I'm tall.
Go to sleep.
Night, Vivian.
Night, Gemma.